spend a few minutes, your thoughts on that that interaction there. Yes, Susan. Y'all able to hear that? The second point was it's not that much of a help to tell somebody when they're going through suffering that this is your, the assumption is it's your fault. There, you've done something in order to bring this about. And the first was legitimizing, validating the reality of suffering and not just jumping over it. Yeah. Okay, what else? Yes, Steve.
Something that I thought was missing from the conversation, and that was the necessity for suffering because of the fall. Where does suffering come from? Who is responsible for it? The conversation I saw, the responsibility was, even from Keller, was all on God to explain himself. And if you start from that premise, you're defending God, which is ridiculous to me, that he can defend himself. When he steps forth and says, thou shalt have no other God besides me, he doesn't say, he doesn't offer any proof of his existence from his creation when he says that. This is what he says. And so when I look at suffering, where I want to start with is that it is a result of rebellion, and we are the ones who are in rebellion. And why isn't there more? In other words, my premise would be that all of the things that we enjoy and all of the common grace, that God opens up his hand and satisfies every living creature to some extent, why does he do that when immediately we should just be thrown into suffering because of our sin and because of sin exists?
Anybody else feel like that was missing? Yep. How many felt that something should have been said about that? Yeah. I agree. Okay, what else? We'll come to that in a minute. Yeah,
Jay. Kind of bouncing off what he said. One thing he did say, I think, last week, was, I used this at work, going through the guys in the Bible study, is that the law of God is not central to Christianity. Central to Christianity is the God who is love. But I think he could explain that out of his love for us, he's given us a law that made to be omniscient, that gives us the best for us. And we rebel against him. And therefore, the judgment, ultimately, anything bad that happens to us is, in a sense, grace, because we deserve much worse. The fact that we're not in hell is grace. Okay. Even if all we're suffering is, and I know, if somebody comes up and says, I got cancer, saying, oh man, you're resentful. That's not what I'm talking about. But in this context, explaining that suffering, as he said, is not God's fault. It's our fault. We're trying to shift the blame off of ourselves to God. When we're the one who rebelled against our fault, the judgment that we get is what we earn and deserve. But of course, then explain it, and we can escape that judgment. Because God himself has love for man and judgment on himself. I think you've got to know that you're not explaining it.
Okay. All right.
But if you're being patient,
yeah, that's right. What else? All right. Yes, sir. Okay. Excellent. He said, your name, brother?
Kevin.
Kevin said he thought that the issue of free will be brought up as opposed to God dominating and controlling, I assume. So. Yeah, Tony?
I spent a lot of time talking about suffering.
Yeah, good.
I spent a lot of time, in my opinion, actually talking about the topic.
Right, right.
I missed the intro, but I think that sounds like the topic.
Yeah, suffering and the two questions were, why does God allow suffering and why is there so much evil in the world?
Well, I feel like they spent 95% of time on the first topic. And didn't even discuss the foundation of it, which is the second. So.
Yeah, right.
And so to have evil, you have to have morality.
Right.
Right.
Good. All right. Anything else? Yeah, Mikey? Two more. I think there's two. I think there's six sessions total. Yeah. Ben?
I was struck by the difference, how tremendously different the two conclusions are. I hear the gospel and the gospel is true. Okay, it's a great coping mechanism.
Yeah. Good. Tyler?
Or you can appeal to the fall of Adam within the Christian worldview itself. So you can say, okay, here's why God isn't like this circular square, because here's the Christian worldview story about people.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking with someone who doubts the very existence of God, appealing to the fall is not going to be very persuasive, because the truth of that depends on God existing in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So really two different sets of theology kind of overlapped, and it wasn't really a very clear distinction.
Okay. Let me get Drew, and then that's it, because we got 25 minutes, and I hope it's okay. I have a few things to say. So, Drew.
Oh, I was just going to say.
But excellent feedback. Thank you.
I agree with the criticism that, you know, he didn't get into the fact that much suffering does exist, because, I mean, it's all a result of sin, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we live in a broken world,
mm-hmm.
that's why
mm-hmm.
there's suffering. I think that certainly could have been brought up. But I think also there's a reason probably why I didn't get into that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, he's dealing with people from a much different worldview, right, than we are, and he's being patient with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think where he did get, when he got to the cross, he got them thinking about how
mm-hmm.
the distinction between Christianity and all the other world religions that we serve a God who willingly suffered
mm-hmm.
for us was really powerful. And so just the fact that he was able to get there with them, I think it's a good model for us that we may not get in our conversations with our friends, like
mm-hmm.
we eventually want to get there, right? Where we're talking frankly about sin.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's probably important for us to remember this is one conversation.
Right.
He's juggling with a lot and trying to, you know, I think it's a good model for us in terms of, again, like we've been talking about, of listening, of getting, you know, getting into some really important conversations without, that conversation about sin can be really, really offensive
mm-hmm.
to people from the secular worldview. And we need to get there, like that's important, I'm not saying it's not, but
mm-hmm.
but this is one conversation,
okay.
you know, that we're seeing.
Good.
Good.
All right. Good. All right. Thank you, everyone. What I'm going to do is, at this point, not so much criticize this particular session or say he should have done this, he should have done that. I want to give us a large overview, including some of what he said, which I think was helpful, and including some of the other things that some of you felt were missing. And if it's a total answer and response, I do think this was insufficient. Was it sufficient for what he was doing at this particular time in session? You know, that's yet to be seen, right, between him and the Lord and these people. But I do want to try to, in the few minutes that we have, include some of the major points, but also include some stuff that some of you are feeling, I think rightly, is missing in the big conversation. So why does God allow suffering? Why is there so much evil in the world? I think it's important, first of all, to distinguish the difference between, even philosophically, suffering and evil. Evil is a moral term. Suffering is an existential term. Not everything that is suffering is a moral evil. Is a tsunami in and of itself a moral evil? Is the fact that the tectonic plates shift and there's movement under the ocean and it causes the molecules in the water to begin to absorb energy and creates a wave that comes in, is that a moral evil? Or is cancer a moral evil? Is cancer itself a sin? But is hatred for my brother an evil? So I think there's an important difference is distinguishing between, at least the way I'm terming it, things that cause discomfort, pain, disappointment, suffering, and then evil. Because I think those are two different issues that are bound together. But why is there suffering and why is there evil are really kind of two different categories. So mostly so let me just give some, again, using the pattern that we've used before, defensive. If you notice how the conversation started out, it started out with a classic syllogism that, and let me put it a little more plainly than what they did. Christianity claims that God is all-powerful, premise one. Christianity claims that God is all-knowing. Christianity claims that God is all-loving, right? So those are the three premises. The conclusion from that is, if he is all-powerful and all-loving and all-knowing, he's all-powerful so he could stop all evil, he's all-knowing so that he knows about all evil, and he's all-good so that if he has the opportunity and power, he will necessarily stop all evil. You with me? Seems like a pretty sound conclusion. Then the secondary conclusion from that is evil exists, correct? Therefore, that definition of God, that God as defined in those three premises, does not exist. Is that fair, Tyler? Is that a fair summary? Simple oversimplification? Okay. So either God is not all-knowing, and so you have something called openness theology. God is kind of developing, and he doesn't know about evil, but he's there with you when it happens kind of thing. Or he's not all-powerful. There's something more powerful than him. He can't quite stop it. He can't be preemptive. He's not really all-powerful. Or he's not all-loving, and he's not all-good, because he's allowing things. And in some cases, you will notice people will get very angry at the concept of God, of the Christian God. And it's because of things that they've suffered. And as soon as, you know, it's easier for them to think about and live dismissing the existence of God, because as soon as the God conversation comes into the room, because of their suffering, they get angry at the God that they don't believe in. And I think this puts the finger on it. Because there is suffering, if he actually does exist, then he must be evil or not care about me in particular or something like that. So what immediately happens in this discussion, the name of the of this particular problem, we call it the problem of evil, but the technical term is theodicy, which comes from two words, theos, which is the word for God, and dikaios, which means to justify or to make righteous. So really what's happening in that opening syllogism and what people are doing is, as Steve said, putting God on trial and saying, I'm bringing a charge against God. Because there's suffering in the world, then he's not the kind of God that Christianity claims. Now, he may be something else. Most likely he doesn't exist. But it's the attempt to justify God in the light of the existence of evil. Okay, that's the technical term. So that's where we're really the conversation starts out. So now comes the issue of, do we even allow that? Do we even say, you know, do we say, who are you? And, you know, God could crush you with his thumb right now if he wanted to. You're an ant rebelling against a bulldozer. You know, do we take that, or do we put it in a larger context, or do we actually try to answer the question? And those are all different approaches that have been taken. And some people will more aggressively say, who are you, O man, to reply against God? There are others who say, I get what you're feeling. And from that, let me try to explain So there are different ways of coming at that. Yeah, see?
I was just going to say there could be something less than that method to say who is the independent party.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it didn't have to be so...
Yeah, that's true. On a scale, those are two, and you can come in between. Good. All right. So those are some ways, and as we think about those ways, here are just some bullet points of things I think are helpful in the conversation. One is the distinction between moral evil and general evil / suffering. Again, to make the distinction that there is such thing as evil and as suffering. This gets to what Tony was saying, that if somebody wants to accuse, if people are asking, why do people murder other people? Why are people molested? Why are these kind of things? Those are moral questions. The general issue of suffering, why is there cancer? Why are there tsunamis? It's kind of a categorically different thing. One of which, as a brother said, was it Kevin? Is that right? Kevin said the issue of free will to some degree is connected to the issue of moral evil, but not so much as far as the suffering, as far as the what we'll call natural evil or something like that. Okay, so I think that's a helpful part in conversing is what are we talking about? Are we talking about why people do evil things, or are we talking about why they're suffering, kind of that passive evil, that natural evil? Okay, I think that's just helpful to distinguish that. As a couple of you said, I think it's helpful rather than, and what was it you said, to be ministerial sensitive?
Ministerially responsible.
Philosophically precise. Okay, so coming out of the gate, one of the issues in dealing with people's humanity, Jesus, you know, sympathizes with our weaknesses. And so are we immediately ready to jump out and answer these things philosophically? Is there something that we need to pay attention to as far as the person's experience of suffering? So they have a whole accumulative baggage of specific things, and maybe they've suffered far beyond what we could even possibly comprehend. To bypass the sympathizing part of that kind of strips us of our humanity, doesn't it? And even Jesus, he comes along teaching and preaching, but yet he is healing as well, and he is showing mercy, and he is moved with compassion. And so he doesn't just stand up and give philosophical lectures as far as why all these sinners are suffering under the judgment of God. He is touching, and he is loving, and he is serving, and he is sympathetic. So I think sympathizing with that, affirming the reality, not trivializing, not making suffering or moral evil, either one, a syllogistic bullet point, but affirming the reality of what suffering is. Third thing here, I do think it is important at some point in the conversation to talk about, if we're talking about the Christian worldview, the meta-narrative of the fall and the consequences of sin. You're kind of dealing with the solution and what God has done about it, but he really didn't get into why is it even here in the first place, which I think is important. It gets down to that issue. Okay, so coming back to the reality of the fall, the fact that we live in a world of consequences, and what I mean by consequential world is that there are cause and effects reality. And I think it was Ronald Nash in his book on apologetics where he talked about, imagine that God created a world in which shooting a person had no consequences whatsoever. So that suddenly God stops all evil, you know, or the possibility of evil. So, you know, I load up my gun because I'm mad at you. I come over to your house. I shoot and the bullet, you know, just kind of falls out of the front of the weapon. You know, so there are no consequences. And I fall off a building and nothing happens. And so there are no consequences. Well, very soon you would see that it would be a very different world. And what we want are, what we want is a world with no moral consequences, but we don't want a world which there aren't cause and effects, right? Because that then stuff wouldn't work. I mean, if I went to take a drink of water and I really wasn't sure whether it was going to pour up to the ceiling or fall into gravity, and everything was completely chance random, then it would be a very different world. What people want, it seems, is a morally inconsequential world when it comes to my sin. I don't want consequences for my actions and so on. Yeah, go ahead.
What kind of a question or what sort of question would you have asked if you were tempted Keller on that particular topic? Is there a question you could think of that you would ask those people?
To ask the people or ask him?
To ask those people. To bring up that particular aspect.
Somewhere in the conversation, I would ask where, well, do you believe in actual moral evil?
The word moral wasn't even brought up.
Right. But the more Buddhist fella talked about the yin and yang, and even that. And there's a lot that could be said, even with what the different people were saying. There was so much, it was like, oh, duh. And I feel like maybe it's just, it's either righteousness or fleshliness, which I often have trouble distinguishing in myself. But when people are going on the attack against God and are more aggressive, which I felt like there were some statements in here that were more aggressive and more unjustifiable, I kind of want to pick up the game a little bit and say, okay, you're becoming more aggressive and questioning and this kind of thing, rather than me kind of passively throwing out some things and saying, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? I would, my inclination is to get more offensive and begin to start dismantling. So the guy with the yin and yang thing just be like, well, that's all well and good till somebody breaks into your house to rape your wife. Do you sit back passively and say, well, you know, this is a part of the yin and yang. And this is part of, and what I have to recognize that this is really no different than me making love to my wife. And so this is not a moral evil. This is just something which will balance out in the end. That's where I'm going to feel a bit of that angst to say these absurd statements at which not only are you attacking who God is, this God who's created you and upholds you by his very power. And he may not believe that if it weren't for grace, he would be in hell. But I certainly believe that, and I believe that for myself. So at some point, I'm going to pick up, pick up the game and say, okay, you can't just lob things and expect me to always just be the ones answering. At some point, I'm going to start asking you some hard questions. And that's one of them, of how you can justify living so inconsistently with your worldview. So that would be for me. Or the karma thing. Say, well, if you think that karma actually exists, the girl, if you think karma exists, then why do bad things happen in response to bad things? Who's doing that? What is that, personal? Is that impersonal? So that's where I'm going to go on the offense. So I think that's more the offensive. I don't like the term attack or addressing them rather than defensive. So. Okay, so, and then in this, and he doesn't get into it here, and I've heard him talk about it, and here the issue of free will, I'm not talking about free will in the sense that we talk about in reform circles typically. Do we have a free will? No, our will is bound by sin. Philosophically, that's not that's not the term that's typically talked about. We're not talking about free will as far as me being bondage in sin. But do I have a will that's able to make choices that I want to make? And so we do have, in that sense, a free will. We do not do what somebody else wills us to do as a puppet would or as an automaton. There is this issue of free will. And so that's with unless God does something either to change those wills or to restrict those wills, in a world of choices, evil is a real possibility. Okay? So I know that part particularly is a little heady, but that's a point of the conversation I'm going to want to go to.
That's where it is by nature. It's the evil. Make that choice first.
Yes. Well, and that would be a follow-up question, wouldn't it? So if you believe that there's moral and there's moral evil, would you prefer a world in which there is not freedom of choice, or would you prefer a world in which there is freedom of choice? And being good Westerners, or at least thinking much Westernly, they're going to think of liberty, they're going to think of free will, they're going to want to maintain that. So how can you have people making choices that they want to make, and even evil choices, and there not be consequences of evil? I mean, just, you know, we want our cake and eat it too. And then blame God for the evil things that people do. Right? Because he could have stopped that. Okay. Does anybody remember Walter Martin, the original Bible Answer Man? Anybody? Before Hank Hinegraaff? Yeah. So I cut my apologetic teeth with him years and years ago. I discovered cassette tapes in the basement of Southern Seminary Library with him talking about some of these things. But he was in a radio debate one time, and basically somebody, an atheist, proposed this question to him. If God could stop all evil, then why doesn't he? He said, okay, what we're going to do is pretend at whatever top of the hour was, in that moment, God will stop and deal with all evil. And he will punish evil according to what it deserves. So it was a few minutes and finally got to the top of the hour. He says, okay, God just did that. Now, who's left in the world? What is it? You don't exist. I don't exist. Nobody exists. God has cleared the world of moral evil. Because we are all morally evil, God just instantaneously. Now, do you like that solution? That God brings immediate judgment on the entire human race? No. So God has actually, in love, developed a plan in which he offers people a way of salvation in his mercy and grace so that we would not be judged. So what do you want? Plan A? Plan B? Okay? And so that's Walter Martin's approach. And still just. Still righteous. Very quickly. I do think that his point was great. And with him, probably what he's doing here, he was so wanting to get this point in kind of undiluted, because, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things that can be said about all these. He was wanting to say something, I think, so surprising and so throwing them off kilter that it kind of informed everything else that he said. And why he didn't say a lot of these other things, because he wanted this point to be felt. And that is the uniqueness of Christianity, in that the God who is above and beyond suffering, and the one who did not bring evil and suffering into the world, he brought the consequences because of the curse. He didn't do it, but he has voluntarily entered in and suffered under God's wrath and under man's wrath, and has entered in to sympathize with us, and how utterly unique that is. So Keller's smart enough. He knows all of these other arguments way better than I do. But I think he was so wanting people to see it and feel it from a different angle, he dropped that and then just kind of left it. And how much in those moments was he not saying? Because people have probably heard that. Well, God has a purpose for everything. It's a consequence of sin. Probably none of those people have not heard those other arguments. So rather than reusing them, rehashing them, maybe he threw that out there to so throw them off kilter that they would go away thinking about that and then start asking questions. That's a strategy approach that you may or may not agree with, but it may be what he was actually doing. Yeah, Tony? Yeah.
So kind of the problem that I'm having with that is I felt like he wasn't being what Tyler called pastorally or ministerially responsible.
Okay. Right. Yep.
And so it almost makes God a man. Now God is suffering with us.
What did you think of the girl's response? She said, "That's not that unique that God suffered and died. Welcome to life." Oh man, I want to.
Not like there. The issue is God didn't deserve it.
Right, that's right. That's right.
Do we really deserve better than we get?
Yeah.
And I actually have to know it's worth it.
Yeah. Good.
That depends on the frame of reference, too, because, comparing God to the rest of the human race, then, humans suffer, God suffers. Well, if you look at God in the frame of reference of other gods or other answers, that was the point that was making.
Yeah, she wasn't getting that, was she? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I felt she missed the point, too, so. Okay.
Real quick, can I just add one more thing?
Sure.
Just that
one thing that I felt really tense about was the fact that it was just left that he suffered. That's good, and that's awesome. But there was nothing about that he suffered to pay a penalty.
Right.
That part left me.
Or that rose again to bring about joy and hope, right? Right. So that's where, under that fourth point, the creation, fall, redemption, consummation as hope-giving, so that giving them a resolution, and again, this was one conversation, this was his particular strategy for this particular thing. I can think of a lot of my conversations over the years, if you had recorded them and then played them up here, you know, that I would probably say, well, I should have said that. Okay, so we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But with that, in the conversation, certainly, getting into the creation, all things have not always been, including pain and suffering. God created all things good and very good. It is we who rebelled against him, and there are consequences, and the creation itself is groaning. The tsunami and what happens in the creation itself is the groaning because of the consequence. It has been put under the curse. Jesus came to suffer under the curse and was raised again, was crucified, raised again, and is coming again. And all of that stuff that you are frustrated about death and moral evil, God is resolving in Jesus Christ. And so then pointing them, not only kind of God sympathizes with you, that's a hugely important point, but getting to, not only do we have an origin to the story and why things are the way they are now, but there's also hope that God has entered into human history and has begun a work that is going to undo. And all these things that you're frustrated about, God's going to address all of those issues. Okay, so I think that's where getting into the meta-narrative here would be helpful. Oh. Exactly. I thought the illustration, I would push it even further. He kind of mentioned it, the difference between a six-year-old and parents when they do something and suffering happens and so on. If that's true of a six-year-old and a, you know, 20-something-year-old mom, dad, how much more for us who are finite in our wisdom, finite in our knowledge, finite. I mean, I don't even understand all of the things that are happening in my own life and the consequences of my own decisions. Now, multiply that by billions of people. It's only infinite mind and wisdom that can even do that. So to say that God is working all things for good is not a little bitty tiny Band-Aid, unless you have a small view of God. If you have a large view of God as infinitely and infinitely powerful and infinitely loving and infinitely amazing graciousness, then to say that in the midst of your suffering, you may not get the explanation that you want now, but in the end, it will be well. That's something I can promise you, that in Christ, it will be well. So I think it was a good illustration. Again, it could be... Then follow up with that, I've heard another message where he's dealing with that, and I think he just overall does a better job covering more of the field. But just because I can't think of a good reason doesn't mean that there isn't one. As far as, well, why are people kidnapped and put into the sex trade? I don't know. But I don't have to know in order to justify that God knows. You see the difference? There are things that other people do that I don't know that are justified. And if that's true of me and other people, it's true of me with a finite mind. In other words, I'm not responsible to give you an answer of why every evil exists in order to justify the existence of God. I can't do that. There's no way any of us could bear that responsibility. And because there is moral evil contrary to God's character, it is our responsibility to pursue good and justice. I mean, again... The Buddhist fella to say that everything, I mean, I would want to push that. It's like, well, what do you think about the sex trade? What do you think about, you know, drugs? What do you think about, you know, Wall Street? Should there be any laws governing the CEOs of Forbes, Fortune 500 companies? Is there anything where can they just take people's retirement plans and 401k plans and use it for however they, no, that's wrong. Yeah. Okay. Then that's not Buddhist. You know, you should accept that, and that's just the way that it is. Okay, so let me just read these offensively. This depends on the person and their view. Going around that room, you have a skeptic, you have a Buddhist, you have several others. I'm not even going to try. because it's vomit hour. Okay, so let's learn, let's grow, let's think, let's engage, let's model, I think, his, even if we don't use the exact technique or strategy, let's model his good listening, right? And responding well, his compassion, and willingness just to engage people. May God give us help to do that. Let's pray. Lord, this topic is so vast and massive, and yet we rest again at the end of the day when our brains are fried and overloaded, that we are children babbling about a God who is infinite, infinitely wise, infinitely holy, infinitely knowing of all things. And Lord, we are like ants to a bulldozer in regards to everything about us and everything about you. So please, Lord, give us a heart first and foremost to understand and grow in our own knowledge of the gospel, a heart for people to understand and communicate to them in love and dignity and compassion, and also wisdom of how to speak in each scenario and each situation for the love and for the good of the other person, and ultimately for your glory. So bless us as we take our break, and be with us as we come again in worship. We ask in Christ's name. Amen.